This past Monday, a lot of folks had a get out of work for a day free card to play, also known as a paid holiday. Specifically, I'm talking about state and city workers, though I suspect a few other folks with other agencies also got to stay at home or go to a place of their choosing other than the workplace. I'm talking about Seward's Day, which is celebrated on the last Monday of every March. Strangely, it's one of those holidays the federal government has yet to put on its calendar, which would thereby allow my wife and I to have the same day off. Oh well, I guess there are others. I'm kidding, of course. Seward's Day is a uniquely Alaskan holiday, during which time we remember Alaska being officially purchased from Russia, and the man who, in large part, made that happen. I have spoken of Seward on here before, though it's been a number of years. In conversations with a few people around town in the past week or so, I came to the conclusion that William Seward might not make for a bad topic reboot, so that's the direction we're going to go today. Besides, history's always a kick, right? Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Again, Monday was the official recognition, just like it is every last Monday of March, every year. However, the actual holiday of the event was yesterday, March 30th, so there is that in talking about this today. Seward's Day was created to remember the signing of the treaty by which the United States purchased Alaska from Russia. Officially, that took place on March 30th, 1867. So yesterday marks 150 years since that happened. Seward's Day gets its name from the man who was then Secretary of State, William H. Seward, who negotiated the purchase from Russia. I'd like to point out that it's not to be confused with Alaska Day, a similar day in October that commemorates the formal transfer of control from Russia to the United States. Before we get to the whole Russia to the United States part of the story, let's start with, what do you know about William H. Seward? Seward was actually a notable American who accomplished a lot more during his life than just presiding over the acquisition of Alaska. In fact, during one of the most infamous nights in American history, he too was affected, though it's almost always another key figure who is remembered, and for pretty good reason. William Henry Seward was from the state of New York. He served as the 12th governor of his home state, as well as a U.S. senator representing New York, and he also served as Secretary of State under Presidents Abraham Lincoln and Andrew Johnson. Seward was a highly determined opponent of slavery leading up to the Civil War, and he was a feared and respected leader in the Republican Party during those turbulent years. He was a strong candidate to be the Republican presidential nominee for the election of 1860, though that nomination eventually went to Lincoln. As a political figure, he was characterized by a colleague at the time as one of those spirits who sometimes will go ahead of public opinion instead of tamely following its footprints. In other words, a true leader, not a follower. To my mind, those are good things to have said about you. To me, it speaks to someone who is strong of character and resolve. By all accounts, he was a gifted lawyer, with a strong sense of fighting for what he believed was morally right. He was often described as intelligent, outgoing, and eloquent. Again, certainly terrific attributes to have ascribed to you. I mentioned his role during a particular night of infamy. On the night that President Lincoln was shot and killed by John Wilkes Booth, two other assassinations were planned in an effort to thoroughly cripple the United States government. Two other conspirators to John Wilkes Booth were supposed to attack and kill Vice President Johnson and also Seward, who held the prominent role of Secretary of State. Johnson's attacker got cold feet and never made the attempt, instead passing the evening in a local bar until drunk. However, Seward's attacker, Lewis Powell, did follow through on his attempt. He gained entrance to the Seward home under the pretense of delivering medicine. Seward was bedridden at the time, recovering from injuries sustained during an accident with horses. Powell was stopped at the steps by one of Seward's sons. Powell fought with the son, and in doing so, his gun was rendered inoperative. He forced his way up the stairs and into the bedroom, where he pulled out a knife and repeatedly stabbed Seward in the face and neck. Powell was sure that his attempt was fatal. He was captured the next day and eventually convicted and hung, along with three other conspirators, including the fellow who got cold feet on Johnson and got drunk instead. Seward survived the attack that night, but had a long recovery and carried scars on his face and neck for the rest of his life. But his life as a lawyer or senator and even his near-death experience are not what people remember William Seward for. They remember him for Alaska. Seward was a dedicated expansionist. He was convinced that Alaska was an outstanding opportunity for America to exert a stronger influence in the Pacific region. He also felt it had a value as a source of natural resources for trade and strategic potential for the military. In these thoughts, history would certainly reveal that he was a visionary. Seward himself certainly did not shy away from how he felt about it. He was once asked what he considered to be his greatest accomplishment while serving as Secretary of State. Seward responded, "The purchase of Alaska, but it will take the people a generation to find it out." Russia, for its part, had been a willing seller for quite a while. They had debts of their own to pay off from fighting with Great Britain. They had actually approached our country about selling Alaska prior to the Civil War, and we were interested. But funding the Civil War took precedence, and a deal was stalled. After the war, negotiations eventually resumed. Seward actually began talks with Russia before receiving authorization from President Johnson. Initially, as the plan began to take shape, there wasn't a great deal of opposition within the cabinet. The final agreement in the form of a treaty was signed March 30, 1867, and transferred Alaska to the United States for a total price of $7.2 million. I'll save you digging out your calculators to let you know that amounts to 2.5 cents per acre for an area twice the size of our second biggest state, Texas. Opposition was a bit stiffer in Congress. The treaty was ratified by the U.S. Senate by a single vote. Public sentiment about the purchase was varied, though Seward caught some flack from many factions. We know now that, in the years following the purchase, gold and oil were both discovered in abundance, in addition to other mineral resources that continue to be discovered even today. Also, timber and other natural resources have been developed and utilized, and Alaska is recognized for the unique and valuable landmass that it is. That said, none of that was obvious at the time of the purchase. Russia was convinced the region was of very little value and too remote to do anything with or adequately defend. Doubters across the United States mocked the purchase with monikers such as Seward's Folly, Seward's Icebox, and Andrew Johnson's Polar Bear Garden. I'd like to think if William Seward were alive today, he'd feel a lot of pride and maybe a touch of humor over how it's all played out. Certainly, he would likely treat himself to a big smile and a chuckle at how his vision of Alaska's potential came to be and just how wrong his critics really were. In looking back, who knows? If things had broke just a little bit differently, Seward could have been killed in the attack at his home, which might have meant someone else much less concerned with American expansion would have gone on to become Secretary of State, and Alaska might never have been purchased, at least by the United States. That single vote that ratified the treaty could have gone the other way. Yeah, I know. A lot of what-ifs and maybes. The fact is, William Seward had a vision for what he thought was best for the United States, and he acted to bring that about. As a result, our great state is a part of the United States. Many of us, who are able to call it home, realize what a really great thing we have in living here. And some of you had Monday off, Seward's Day, to reflect on it and do other things. In closing today, I'd like to give a shout-out to Manicotick School and a few specific folks as well. Last Thursday and Friday, Refuge Information Technician Kemuel Kenrood of Togiak and I were in Manicotick to conduct a hunter's education class with some of their secondary students. 13 kids took part in a full-day classroom session Thursday, followed by a full-day range day on Friday. The weather was magnificent both days, as it has been pretty much every single day of March this year. The kids were terrific, and I want to commend them on their efforts both days and thank them for their cooperation. I'd also like to thank teacher Kirk Coford for having them prepared and ready to go, and Principal Deb Forkner for helping it come together. Additionally, I'd like to thank Kemuel for all he did, and Kurt Buttleman of BBAHC, who joined us on Friday and supervised the live fire range day. And one last thing regarding this class. If student Shayla Gloco ever tries to challenge you to a shoot-off, just say no, hang on to your money, and thank me later. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.